Remember, if the time should come when you have to make a choice between what is right and what is easy, remember what happened to the boy who was good and kind and brave, because he strayed across the path of Lord Voldemort. Remember Cedric Diggory. Welcome to the Basic Cinephile Podcast, Season 1, Harry Potter. I'm your host, Ziana.
And I'm your other host, Adelia. This season on the Basic Cinephile Podcast, we are reading all the Harry Potter books and watching all the Harry Potter movies. And this week, we are kicking off episode 8 with the fourth movie, The Goblet of Fire.
This podcast contains spoilers. This movie's been out for 17 years, so we don't feel bad spoiling anything and everything about it. But if you want to watch it first, pause the episode and go read all the books and binge all the movies, because who knows how many books and movies we will end up referencing in this episode.
Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire was directed by Mike Newell, and the music was composed by Patrick Doyle.
We're introduced to some new characters, most notably Mad-Eye Moody, played by Brendan Gleeson, Fleur Delacour, played by Clemence Posey, and Lord Voldemort, played by Ralph Fiennes. So this movie, what'd you think of it?
I have some mixed feelings about it. There are some things that I really liked. Like, the pace was super quick. Everything is moving. It feels exciting. And then some other things that I didn't super like. They totally took out the house elves and spew and a couple other key things that I found really interesting in the book.
For sure. Okay, well, let's start with some of those bigger themes that are different, I guess. So this is a different director. Again, remember, it was Chris Columbus, who directed the first two movies. Mm-hmm. And then we got Alfonso Cuarón for Prisoner of Azkaban. And then for this movie, we've got Mike Newell. So for those of you that watched the HBO reunion, which mm-hmm. if you haven't seen it yet and you have HBO, you should totally watch it.
So good. So nostalgic.
So amazing. But they go through like each of the different directors and kind of discuss like their take on the wizarding world and like what they were trying to bring to life in the movies that they directed. And so Mike Newell is so funny. He really he focused on the action. And that is very evident in the film because, yeah, like you said, the pacing of this movie, like, we just dive right in. We get straight into the action. And it is action-packed all the way throughout, which makes for a pleasant viewing experience because that book is, 700 pages long or something? It's so long. And to try and fit even a fraction of that into one film is impressive.
Yeah, I feel like he really cut out a lot of things, which usually would make me super frustrated, but he was able to keep the action pace, which mm-hmm. is the Goblet of Fire. The Goblet of Fire is so action-driven. I mean, it's the whole Triwizard Tournament. So I wasn't necessarily angry about the edits that were made because mm-hmm. it still felt like you're getting the experience of being in the Triwizard Tournament.
For sure. I think that some of the books are more story-driven, and then some are a little more action-driven, and The Goblet of Fire definitely falls under the action-driven category. And so in the Return to Hogwarts reunion special, they showed a little behind-the-scenes clip with director Mike Newell. So there's that scene where the Weasley twins are trying to get past Dumbledore's age line. He'd drawn that circle around the Goblet of Fire to prevent anyone from under the age of 17 to walk through it, put their name in the Goblet of Fire. And of course the twins are like, this is perfect for us. We really want to do it. And it sucks. I feel bad for them. They were like 16
and a half. Yeah.
Months away. They make an aging potion and they're like, we only need to make ourselves 6 months older or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so they do. And then they walk through the aging line. They put their names in the Goblet of Fire. They walk out. They celebrate because they think it's great. And then they they kind of have like backfires on them. And so they start getting really old and they grow these like long Dumbledore beards and all their hair turns gray. And then they get mad at each other like, it was your idea. You said it would work. And they start fighting each other. Mm-hmm. And the director said that when they first started filming that scene, he's like, you guys aren't fighting each other.
Yeah, they're brothers and they're like just kind of roughhousing of like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah, but they weren't really going at it because they're not actually mad at each other. And so the director basically gets in there and he's like, okay, I want one of you to fight me. And he makes one of them fight him, kind of to like prove a point of like, this is how we're gonna wrestle. And like, Mike Newell is not a young guy. He's got the gray hair. He's looking older. And so he makes them wrestle him. And what, I think he broke a rib.
He broke a rib.
And this is like towards the beginning of filming.
Yeah. And so I can't remember which of the twins it was, but mm-hmm. they were like, okay, who's going to wrestle me? And he's like, yeah, I will. I'll do it. And then the other one was just kind of giving him crap about like, so you chose to wrestle the director and then broke his rib.
Yeah.
Like, who does that? Who the heck does that?
And this was very public, too. So this was like, this is a scene with a big crowd. So there's a bunch of the cast around, a bunch of the crew around. And yeah, and then he breaks his rib. And then the director basically was like, yeah, it physically hurt. But more than anything, like, he's like, this was my idea. I caused this.
I was the one that was like aggravating the other one. Like, yeah. I was the one that was like the fueling gas for this situation. Yeah. I could have prevented this whole thing, but here I am being like an older director that is wrestling with a like 17-year-old.
Yeah.
And breaking my rib. Your pride is definitely hurt. But then also as like a 17-year-old, you're like, oh my gosh, I broke my boss's rib. Like, and I'm so ashamed. Like, it's my fault.
I gotta see this guy every day for the foreseeable future. Yeah. So that is basically the energy, though, that really does come across on screen for this whole movie is like more. You could tell that the director was pushing them for like more, more, more.
Yeah. And I feel like that was really fun. It was a really fun spirit. And I mean, Daniel Radcliffe specified in the special that this was a time when their hormones were raging the most. Mm-hmm. And then you have this whole other, like, the whole Beauxbatons girls mm-hmm. there, and they're pretty and all this stuff. And then you have all the Durmstrang guys who are, like, jacked. And, mm-hmm. you know, you have way more kids that are your age. And you're like, yeah, you feel awkward and, like, all this tension. But there is, like, a lot of energy within that.
Yes, the sexual tension in this film is thick.
Yeah. I mean, I really love the moment when Harry looks over at Cho Chang and smiles, but he has a mouthful of juice and just spits it out.
Just spits it everywhere. Oh my God, it's so relatable. I mean, I think everyone as a teenager when you start having crushes is awkward, but there's just some people who are better at it than others. And I definitely fall under the spitting juice all over myself category.
Yeah. I relate to that hard.
When Harry, he's up at the Owlry and he asks Cho to go to the
Yule ball.
Yeah, the Yule ball with him.
You want to go to the Yule ball with me?
And it happens right as there's like an owl flying overhead and screeching. And she just looks at him and she's like, I didn't catch that. Yeah. And then he has to say it again. And then it's the moment where she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm already going with Cedric. But yeah, poor Harry. He cannot catch a break. Let's discuss that freaking Owlry for a moment, please.
Okay, so as I was watching it, as most people would know by now, I am not a bird person. They really freak me out. Kudos to you if you love them. They're really pretty, but they freak me out. I looked around and I was like, this is an OSHA violation. There is just poop everywhere. No single inch of that owlry is clean.
Oh, the rafters are covered. The floors are covered. The cages are covered.
Yeah, there's nowhere to perch where there's not poop.
Some of it looked fresh and wet. Some of it looked like it had crusted on there since, you know, before Harry was even born.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever been cleaned in the history of Hogwarts. And it should be cleaned, and it shouldn't be up to Filch to do that. That needs some serious heavy magic.
for real, like, we can brew a potion that turns someone into someone else for a period of time. You know, we can make Polyjuice potion.
We can make Veritas serum, and you have to tell the truth. You can make so many different things, and you can't, like, spray something down that's like, when they poop, it turns into, you know, food or something like that, and then it,
yeah,
you
we
know,
can't we can't solve
compost the itself or
poop problem. So the Wizarding World does not appear to have an OSHA equivalent. They do not appear to have a health department equivalent, and that's a problem.
It is a problem, and as we were discussing earlier, like, I need some Lucius Malfoy energy of, like, holding the school accountable for safety standards and health standards. Like, he might be a really terrible person, but, like, literally the only person advocating for any sort of, like, improvements on Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. So where's the PTA? I know we have this whole, like, Hogwarts, like, kind of like a school board type thing.
Oh, yeah, ambassadors, maybe they have some fancy and school ambassadors or something like that. There's
it's
some
locked
fancy
in my brain somewhere, but it's not here right now. Mm-hmm. But where are they?
Yeah,
who is allowing all this stuff to happen? And I mean, they do, like, bump up the 17-year age minimum for the Goblet of Fire, mm-hmm. and that's really great. But, like, this has been known to, like, kill multiple students throughout the years, so much so that they, like, banned it for mm-hmm. lots of years. Like, it's just kind of crazy that it takes such extremes in the wizarding world. They're, like, not a proactive people.
No. Yeah. Well, and it's so weird. They're like, yeah, these tasks are so intense that you have to be over 17 to compete in them. And then when Harry's name comes out of the Goblet of Fire, they're all freaking out because they're like, oh, crap, you know, we know what's coming. We know what these challenges are. We know that it's dragons for the first challenge. And I'm just like, who made these challenges?
You did.
Yeah.
You chose this.
This seems entirely preventable. Everyone's just like, oh, my God, these challenges are just insanely dangerous.
Is there, like, no, like, tap out version
of
them?
Like, yeah.
Hey, you know, if you ever get to a certain point, you can always just, you know, say, I don't want to do this anymore, and, you know, like, tap out of a challenge where you're like, I physically showed up, I tried.
Yeah.
So you're keeping, like, the magical bond here.
Nope. They're like, oath. It is binding.
Yeah, you got to do it.
Got to do it. And
I'll be damned if you're not injured. So
Yeah.
It's just wild. It's so wild. But going back to earlier when we were saying what some of the differences were. So we have Mad-Eye Moody, which we find out later is Barty Crouch Jr. Mm-hmm. And in the book, it is a little different. If you listened to the last episode, you know Barty Crouch Jr. got out of Azkaban, lived in an invisibility cloak, all that stuff with his dad. This one, he starts out just, like, at the Riddle House with Voldemort and Wormtail.
Yeah, he's in the first scene. So he's never basically under house arrest with his father. Mm-hmm. And then he's never, in the book, it's like he gets sent to Azkaban and then his mother is dying. And so they do the Polyjuice potion and they switch and she sacrifices herself for her son to get him out. And in this one, like, there's no mention of the mother. There's no sacrifice. And honestly, it's like, you see the trial where he gets outed by Karkaroff in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then Moody kind of, like, stuns him. And then there's just this huge gap, right? Like, they don't really explain what Barty Crouch Jr.'s been up to this whole time.
How he got out, or if he got it.
Did he go to Azkaban? Did he not go to Azkaban? And then he's just out, and they just never.
And then he just, like, is reunited with Voldemort. And I just feel like if he didn't have this backstory of breaking out of Azkaban, this is someone who is fiercely loyal. Yeah. Why would he just show up now to go see Voldemort?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. And then that also translates into getting rid of Winky, because Winky is his keeper.
Yeah.
And when they're at the Quidditch World Match, or World Cup. There we go. Harry doesn't, like, get his wand stolen or anything. He's just in the camp. The Death Eaters come, all this stuff. Somehow Harry gets trampled. He gets knocked out. He is by himself in this, like, smoking ruin that is the tents that were set up for the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And then there's just this man walking through, kicking stuff. And it's Barty Crouch Jr. Sets off the dark mark.
He's not blending in at all. Not he's walking subtle. Around and like everything has been burnt to a crisp. So he's like the tallest thing walking mm-hmm. around. And there's just...
There's no one around. It's just Harry on the ground and Barty Crouch Jr. walking around. And he sees him. And I just... that is one thing that like bothers me. But again, it keeps the pace going. And we do set up that it is Barty Crouch and he is doing this stuff.
For the sake of the movie, I feel like the director chose to take out all of the nuance. He took out a lot of the backstory and he mm-hmm. just cut straight to the action. So it does make for a really interesting movie. But ironically, it takes out all of the most interesting parts of the book.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I love the house elves so much. And it comes around that Dobby and Winky play such big parts in the whole story. And mm-hmm. so I haven't seen the last movies in a while. It's been a long time since I've seen like 6, 7, 8. So mm-hmm. I am curious to see how that plays out with... not really setting up how integral the house elves are.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also doesn't really set up the Order of the Phoenix. So there's a lot of like setup that happens in the book. And so like in the book, Sirius gets to be like a really hands-on kind of father figure for Harry. And he's transfigured into the dog. And he's been
camping out
nearby and like in cahoots with Dumbledore to keep track of Harry. And like, we don't get any of that in the movie. And then Bill and Charlie Weasley are pretty hands-on in the book. They're not in the movie at all.
Which is weird because then later Bill and Fleur get married and there's like no introduction. So then all of a sudden, like, I'm just wondering, how do they meet in the movies? Like,
justice for Bill and Fleur. Yeah, they don't get their meet cute.
Yeah, because she sees him like with the dragons. She's like, oh.
She's like, right. Oh, hi. Okay.
All right. I like that long hair and that pierced ear. I see what's up.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like, I don't know, there's not a lot of setup for that. And I do kind of
miss that. I definitely miss that. Again, it does get the essence of the book across.
Yes. I fully understand. If I were put in charge of directing one of these movies, I'd be like, so I'm going to need like an 8-hour window. We're going to make an epic saga here.
Yeah, and it's going to be every single movie. Every single movie is going to be at least minimum 6 hours. How long will it take you to read this aloud? That's how long the movie is going to be.
I need at least 30 minutes dedicated to Peeves. At least.
I need just B-roll of Peeves just throwing stuff at people and, you know, pushing suits of armor around and just being Filch's nemesis. Mm-hmm. I need all that. Where is it?
Where? Is it? Okay, that actually brings up, there is one really important scene with Peeves in the book that's not in the movie, and that is when Harry takes the egg up to the prefect's bathroom in the middle of the night to listen to the egg, basically, because Cedric gave him that clue. And then when he comes out, he's got his invisibility cloak, he's got his Marauder's map.
But he's like, what?
But he's all, you know, like, sudsy from, like, being in this bathtub.
Because he's a 13-year-old boy who just, like, put all the bubbles in and was like, I'll just, you know, go back to the house, you know, like,
so
not dried
so
off and stuff.
So human, where it's like, okay, you survived the dragon, that's really great, but can you survive the next task, which is... underneath a cloak and damp, can you hold on to a metal egg, a wand, a map, and walk through these dark hallways
and not step into a false step? Mm-hmm. Again, the safety of Hogwarts stairs. Who is putting this fake step in where it just disappears and you just have to know? Like, come on.
You know, Dumbledore thinks that's fun though. Like, he could totally fix it. And he's like, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's an important part. Like, so that's, he's got the Marauder's map. He's walking through. He drops the egg. He alerts everyone to where he is.
Mm-hmm.
But he's looking at the map and he saw Barty Crouch
in
Snape's office. And Barty Crouch at that point in the book had been missing. No one had seen him.
He was quote unquote sick. Yes. So they're like, why is this guy who is sick showing up and going in Snape's office? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And then Mad-Eye Moody is able to see him because he can see with his magic eye. And then that's how Moody ends up getting the Marauder's map, which ends up being a super important tool for Barty Crouch Jr.
To
capture his dad, because he knows where everyone is. Mm-hmm. And Peeves is in that scene, or they think it's Peeves.
Yeah.
So he's not actually in the scene, but
who else would be causing this ruckus?
It's Filch, and he's like, this is my chance to finally
get Peeves. He stole a student's like egg. He should be taken out of the school finally,
right? That's just one of those scenes though where it's like, it's not even in the movie, but I can just visualize it so vividly with all of the actors from the actual movie. It's like it's I can't even distinguish like fact from reality almost. It's like I freaking filmed that part in my
head.
I feel like it is in the movie because I see it so clearly. Okay, so should we take a break and hear from our sponsors for this episode?
Yeah, we should.
Hello there, my fellow basic cinephile fan. Jeremy Hirschkorn of Jet Movement Academy here. In my experience as a gym owner and trainer, I've seen the world start to change. You'll need new strategies to keep your health in top condition. That's why I'm offering Jet Online. This is a complete training and coaching package available wherever you have internet access. Go to jetmovement.com to sign up today, or contact me at jeremy@jetmovement.com. Wishing you happy listening and amazing health. Keep moving.
Changed the game just now. I have a rave.
These are the best ideas I've ever heard.
I'm Seth Rogen.
I'm saying that's the commentary that will exist.
A Barbie girl in a Barbie world.
It's defiled Mickey Mouse. Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum,
ba-dum. Vin, vin, venom. Oh my god!
Listen to new episodes weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
So another major difference in this movie is that this is the first Harry Potter movie in the series that is not composed by legendary John Williams.
He's so talented. Oh my gosh, we saw him at the Hollywood Bowl this year, and it was the greatest experience ever. So epic.
I cried like 5 times, and he played songs from like so many of his different movies, but the Harry Potter one was one that like is even extra special.
So special to the point that everybody who had bought like light up items, or they, you know, turned the flashlight on their phone and acted like they were conducting along, like,
yeah, yeah, because so, so and cool. There were like a million a lot of people had lightsabers, because I would say that Star Wars is his most famous film score, but like a lot of the people who had their lightsabers were pretending that they were wands for the Harry Potter song.
So good.
It was so perfect. But yeah, so he composed the first 3 movies, and then a lot of the motifs that he created, which a motif is just like a small snippet of music that is basically like a theme. Mm-hmm. And so we get like Hedwig's song is like a little motif that shows up throughout all of the movies. So that's why even though he didn't compose the rest of them, there is still a similar vibe to all of the music. But both of us had in our notes as our very first bullet point was like, I think I wrote music sounds darker.
Yeah, I said music darker, but familiar.
Yes. So it does. It just kind of gives us like the vibe changes.
The vibe does change, and it for good reason.
Yes.
I mean, Voldemort is back. This is no longer this distant threat or something that is, you know, a little bit more contained. He doesn't have a body at this point. It's kind of this weird, you're not alive, but you are alive, because he's a Horcrux. But this really does amp up everything. It is both dark and ominous, but then it's also one of the most playful scores, I would also say. Like,
yes.
You've got, like, this competition, so you got, like, these horns in a way that you haven't had it before. I mean...
Yes. No, we've got like, a middle school, high school band vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh my god, the music that stands out to me the most from this movie is... the third challenge in the Triwizard Tournament before they go into the maze, and then when they come out of the maze, they play this same little snippet of music, and it's like the
bum 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 b
And like when they go in, everyone's like, you know, we've got Filch lighting off the cannon before people tell him to light it off every time. It cracks me up every time.
Every single time.
Every single time. And then they go into the maze, whatever. And then they come out and it's the same little lighthearted, like a lot of horns and stuff. And Cedric's dead. And Harry has just had the worst experience of his entire life. And we've got this like happy band music going on.
Because nobody else has experienced this. So you're like coming at it like, oh my gosh, Hogwarts won. I know that's Harry. I know that's Cedric.
Yeah.
And then things start to feel wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's not right. They're not getting up. Cedric is laying on the ground. Harry is attached himself to it.
Yeah.
And then, honestly, the most heartbreaking moment of the entire series is Cedric's dad running down to the field and just screaming, "That's my boy. That's my son."
Oh my God. It's so sad. It's so sad. God. And it's the fact, too, that like, Harry comes back, you know, and he's holding Cedric because he had to. He had to physically grab his body and grab the port key in order to bring him back. But then he gets back and it's like he doesn't want to let go. He's like in this moment of shock and
just
trauma.
Can't be real.
Yeah. And they come over and they kind of try and like grab Harry off of Cedric. And he just like reaches back for him with such an intensity. And he's basically just like clinging to his dead body. And then, yeah, Cedric's dad comes down. It's like, it's so sad.
It's really the first time you kind of see it modeled in reverse of what Harry's parents sacrificed for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see this, like, complete love that is just so, so huge, so big, yeah, that it cannot be expressed in this moment. This grief, even though it's just acting, yeah, is so intense that like I straight up cried.
And yeah, just, I cried
like,
too.
It just broke my heart. This kid is never coming back to life.
No.
He's never going to do all these things that in the book, like his dad is like, oh yeah, you know, you'll tell your kids about how you beat Harry Potter in Quidditch. You'll, mm-hmm, you know, we'll do this in the future. We'll do this in the future because you have these future plans with this person and they're just never going to happen.
Yeah.
It's gone and it's so tragic. It's so tragic. And you have this happy music.
Yeah. It's so sad. And also Robert Pattinson is just like so hot. Like he is just such a good looking man. And so, I mean, that's, you know, I'm making a joke, but, like, did the hot guy have to die? You're like, man, I really liked watching him compete in this Triwizard tournament. And then he's gone. This was the first, and I think probably only character in the movie series that I had a crush on back in the day. And now that I'm going back and rewatching, I will admit that I was wrong. There are a lot of attractive people in this movie, and I'm not sure how I never had a crush on Rupert Grint or never had a crush on the Weasley twins.
Oh,
or
Weasley
Neville
twins did it for me, yeah.
Or Tom Felton. I was just like, not interested. But Robert Pattinson?
Well,
I was interested.
Okay, who isn't interested? You would have to be just completely oblivious to faces. Look at Robert Pattinson and be like, at the very least, be like, he's not my type, but he is attractive.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody else very much could love him, but, you know, not for me. No.
You don't have to be into dudes to be attracted to him.
No. You do not.
It's just when you're that hot, I think it just transcends.
Hot is hot.
All sexual orientations, ages, it doesn't matter.
You're into it.
Yeah, he's...
I mean, at the very least, he's, like, a tough competitor, and you're like, yeah, I'd play against him.
Yeah.
You know, all right.
Yeah.
That would bring out the competition in me, because he's a worthy adversary.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's a very off-putting moment, and I think that is a really good setup going into Moody taking Harry out of that, because you're, like, coming into this, yeah, you've got this tragedy mixed with this, like, jovial music, and so it just doesn't feel right. And then Mad-Eye takes Harry, and you know, that's when we have this moment of not necessarily the same type of confession that we got in the book, which was so much better,
yeah,
but you do get him asking about, like, Lord Voldemort, did the Dark Lord do this? Did he forgive them? Did he mm-hmm. do this? You know? And it made me realize that at the very beginning, Moody never refers to him as Voldemort or he who must not be named. He only says the Dark Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, ooh, that's an indicator.
Yeah.
That's it.
And it's like, he's just such a weird dude that, like, I feel like people didn't necessarily catch on to his behavior because it's like, well, how was I supposed to notice that you called Voldemort the Dark Lord
when you've got this
eyeball that's just like zooming around and you're just like clomping around through Hogwarts with this freaking metal foot or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, okay, the eye is super creepy because he sees through the invisibility cloak and sees Harry. And at another point, he says that he sees Harry's socks. I mean,
through his robes. And then in the book, I forget who it is, but it's a female student.
Lavender Brown or like Parvati.
Who says basically like, ooh, he gives me the creeps. And it's like, yeah. And then you find out that he can see through students' clothing. So that's a problem, because if it's really Mad-Eye Moody,
he doesn't give
two craps about looking through students' clothing. No, he's out here trying to protect those students. Mm-hmm. He's willing to lay down his life to protect anyone. That's just who he is. Barty Crouch Jr., on the other hand, big pervert vibes.
Yeah, big perv vibes.
So I think he's just like trolling through the school and like looking under kids' robes. Ugh, he's gross. And okay, so the eye. I think they did a really good job on the makeup for Mad-Eye Moody. He's got these big, like, facial scars, and his face is supposed to be basically, like, disfigured because he's
chunks
got, like,
of his nose is gone. Yes. His mouth is super scarred, so, like, when he smiles, the muscles don't work in the same way. It's not going to be this yes. symmetrical thing because he's been cursed and jinxed mm-hmm. and fought through so many moments.
I think they did a good job of that. His face does look like the way it was described in the book, but big swing and a miss for the eye for me. He's got this big, like, it almost looks like a cartoon, like, eye patch with this strap that, like, goes around, and, like, it just doesn't look like a real fabric. Like, it looks almost kind of like metal, but it's, like, attached to his face.
I don't love that.
I hate it.
It's not a good look, but what is a good look is everything about Rita Skeeter.
Oh,
I love Rita Skeeter so much, and she is so perfect in this film. I should have looked up who played her. Kudos. She's awesome.
She's perfect. Her whole, like, costume and everything mm-hmm. is amazing. She plays that, like, just slimy reporter mm-hmm. so well. One of those who's just, like, sickly sweet. Those mm-hmm. women that are like, oh, honey, oh, sweetie. But the whole Bless your heart. But the whole time, like, to your face, they're calling you sweetie, but they're, like, calling you fat while they call you sweetie. Or they're, like, making fun of your clothing.
That you're stupid, that you're, like,
putting you down. We all know those people. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just gross. And then she's got the added bonus of, like, being a reporter. So it's like, oh, come here, Harry, let's talk about this. And then he sees the quick quills quote. So she's like, and he's like, I'm not.
My eyes aren't glistening with the traumas from my past yes. or, like, whatever. That cracked me up. That's such a good
line.
So good. And I think that really, like, set the tone for who Rita is.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered her as being a larger part of the movie.
I thought she was in, like, every scene. And
she's just such a bit character.
She's barely in it. But she's so memorable.
So memorable. But you don't find out that she's an anime guy that is unregistered. And she's literally turns into a bug. So mm-hmm. then she can go and find out all this sketchy stuff about what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was another nuanced thing that you don't get to see. I guess you didn't need it, but, like,
no, we
dang
don't.
If it's not fun.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. And then we don't, like, the very ending is totally different. In the book, it's like Barty Crouch Jr. gets the kiss of death from the Dementors. He basically takes a Veritas serum and, like, tells all of his life secrets. Then we get Harry in the hospital wing and, like, a really special moment where he's surrounded by all these people that love him. It's like Bill and Mrs. Weasley are there, and Ron and Hermione, and Sirius, and Dumbledore shows up, and then Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, you know, he rushes in and they're all, like, ready to tell him this big news, and Fudge basically is like, I don't believe any of it. We already killed Barty Crouch Jr. Dumbledore, you're crazy. And then it's like, that's kind of the ending. And so we miss that. They do set up this kind of rift between Dumbledore and the Ministry of Magic, and like the Ministry of Magic not really listening to them and taking them seriously. So they, I know that they did it for the sake of speeding things up, and they do kind of establish that, but I feel like the book did a better job of really explaining that Dumbledore's on one side and the Ministry of Magic is on the other side, and the Ministry of Magic is kind of on Voldemort's side.
Yeah, and in doing some like deeper dives, it just, and we'll do a special like episode and stuff on this, but it, there is a lot of history with the Ministry of Magic of being preferential to pure blood.
Yeah.
You know, and so even though they might not be overtly for Voldemort, the systems that are in place definitely favor those who are of more pure blood and a little bit more of that like aristocracy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so you see that the ministry doesn't necessarily work in favor of justice and more so for what works best for them.
Yes.
And I mean, if that's not the truth in life, then I don't know what is.
Yes. Fudge, especially, like his whole motivation is basically like, I don't want Voldemort to be back, therefore he is not back.
Yeah. And I
deny. And it's like, well, that's, I understand, not the way it works. Yeah, I understand that you don't want Voldemort to be back, but that doesn't mean that he isn't back. And we have to talk about this. Voldemort is back. Ralph Fiennes is playing Voldemort. And I don't think I truly appreciated what a world-class actor he is until I was an adult. Because honestly, this is going to sound kind of stupid, but as a kid and as a teenager, when I was watching these movies, I didn't even necessarily like connect that Voldemort was played by a person, if that makes sense, because he just was Voldemort.
Yeah, it's very otherworldly. It doesn't seem like an acting job. It's
no.
It's very much he is Voldemort in these moments. Yeah,
I feel like they were like, well, we can't cast anyone, so we better go out to Romania or Albania or whatever he was hiding. We better find Voldemort, do a spell, and bring back the real Voldemort, and then put him in the movie.
And he is so incredible. In watching the special, they do a little bit of a behind the scenes on that. And so, like, all the hair and makeup and stuff that they were doing. And so, like, they do the makeup that he's, like, bald and, you know, the, like, color overall. But he has, like, stickers on his face of, you know, where they're going to, you know, match the facial expressions for when they CGI the nose being gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he still has the long fingernails, the long gross toenails, the teeth, and all this stuff. And literal, like, the actors who played alongside of him, the even adult actors were like, I was scared in these moments. Like, and it wasn't this, like, kind of, like, not, a, like, a big deal scare, but, like, he brought fear into my life when he was playing this part, when he's got this, like, the, like, whispery voice that's, you know, it just is totally otherworldly. And he is terrifying.
He's so creepy. And he said something, too, about the voice that he was doing, that it's, like, because Voldemort had, like, lost a body and basically lived as, like, this spirit. Right? Like, he's so disconnected from being a human. So it's like, even when he gets a human body back, like, he's not really human. He's kind of in this weird in-between place. And so Ralph Fiennes was saying, like, that he did this, like, intentionally very breathy voice because Harry Potter. And, like, it's just like, because he's like, he wanted to kind of embody that spiritual component of Voldemort, but also, like, this is not a good spirit. This is an evil spirit. And so thinking about that, like, yeah, we don't get a lot of really nuanced villainous characters on screen who are so terrifying looking, but then doing, like, a soft voice. We kind of tend to associate it with, like, villains being loud, villains having, like, a deep, like, scary masculine voice. And it's, like, it's almost more off-putting to put, like, a very masculine looking character. Like, he's like jacked in this movie. Voldemort's arms and shoulders are like broad. Like, this guy.
You have a thing for Voldy?
I might. No, but I was noticing that because it was like, oh my God, he's just like, he's ripped. But then he's got these like long, disgusting fingernails. And then you hear this like, this voice coming out of him. And you're like, oh, it's like the juxtaposition of that is off-putting. Mm-hmm. And it creates even more fear.
It totally does. And he played it so, so well. And it does create this like sense of
disconcert. Your skin crawls. And you're just like, oh, this is creepy. Yeah. And it was so cool in the reunion to hear all of these actors. And it was people like, who plays Lucius Malfoy again?
Jason Isaacs.
So it's like, it's older adults and it's adults who are, you know, established actors with their own prolific careers. And like Lucius Malfoy, even like Tom Felton was saying, like Lucius Malfoy was actually, or Jason Isaacs was like kind of intimidating and scary to work with in all these scenes.
Yeah, that he loved working with him. And then he also like hated working with him. He's like, yeah, it would be so weird when like he would be so mean to me as Malfoy. And then like, as soon as it cut was like, hey, are you okay? Was that okay? Yeah. You know, like, how are you doing? You know,
I think he said something along the lines of like, well, my scenes with him were always really fun. And then he like pauses and goes, well, no, fun isn't the right word, but like it was, you know, it was a good working experience.
Yeah,
like, we got really good scenes together.
It was really creepy. Like, yeah. It wasn't a great like dynamic, but then it like also was.
Yeah.
Like,
but you could tell with those Voldemort scenes that like, yeah, he went all in on this like creepy Voldemort character, and a lot of that like fear from the other actors being like, ugh, was just real. And he was even saying, he's like, that's even with the nose. Mm-hmm. They were all saying like when they saw the movie and without the nose, it's like he got even creepier.
Yeah. And like you said, it's that quiet voice that it really like, it brings in an aspect of like how cruel he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he does kill people, but more importantly than that, he likes to torture people.
Yeah.
Physically, emotionally, like all of the torture, he likes people to be in pain around him.
Yeah.
And you can tell that in the way that he speaks and conducts himself, which like is just so, it's just so wrong.
Icky. I mean, the way that he tells Wormtail to kill Cedric, he literally says, kill the spare.
Mm-hmm.
How messed up is that? And that's before he gets the body. And that's when he's really little. He's even like, he really sounds like a little weird, breathy baby at that point. It's just like, kill this bear. And it's like, okay, well then he's gone.
That was a spot on Voldemort voice right there. I live with Voldemort.
Obviously I've been practicing.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you get that like really creepy moment of that. And then you have Harry, you know, going back from the graveyard. And then you have... And in the book, it has the transition of, like, he was in the hospital and he's had to relive all these traumas and whatnot. And in the movie, it just kind of cuts to, well, the Triwizard Tournament is over and the schools are going back up. Like, we, you know, everybody's saying goodbye. You're like, you know, we kind of said this moment about Cedric Diggory's dead and we should all be friends. And then they're, like, hugging the Beauxbatons, hugging people from Durmstrang. They're all getting on their, you know, ship and into the carriage and they're flying off and they're sailing off. And it's, like, really weird because the tone of the movie, which has been action and dark, all of a sudden turns to this, like, it's the end of the year and we're about to have our summer holidays. And, like, it's, oh, it was so cool to meet you all. Mm-hmm. And then... It really, the most off-putting of anything, not Voldemort, not, you know, the music of the death, you know, none of that. It is Hermione Granger looking longingly and like happily off into the sunset and saying, everything's going to change now, isn't it? And like smiling.
Yeah. So
what?
The ending did not work for me. It's like the last 2 minutes of this movie don't work for me. It's everything. The music sounds hopeful and bright. The sky is sunny. It's beautiful weather. Yeah, and everyone's like going off into the distance. And I'm like, it doesn't make any sense because we talked about this in our last episode that normally is the tone at the ending of the books of like Harry just overcame this crazy threat to his life, but we're all, you know, we solved the problem.
And now
we fixed it. And now you can go home and... you know, and life will go on and it's fine. And the ending of this book is like, poop hit the fan and it is going down. Nothing's ever going to be the same. Voldemort or Dumbledore announces to all of the kids that Voldemort is back,
mm-hmm.
and like to stay together and unified and vigilant in your fight against the dark arts. And yeah, and then this movie kind of just like flipped the script entirely on that. They're like, instead of ending with this like sad and kind of fearful tone, we're gonna end with happiness. And it's like, we literally just like lost a student. Someone mm-hmm. just died. And it's someone that everyone would have felt like they had a connection to. Even people there who had never spoken a word to Cedric Diggory. You just watched him in the Triwizard Tournament compete in 3 challenges. So every single person there is going to be personally affected by mm-hmm. this loss.
Even the Slytherins, because they're going for Cedric over Harry the whole time.
Yes. You know? Like, yes. No, it's going to affect every single person. And so for them to just be like, okay, well, I guess we're going home and it's summer now. Yay. Bye, Harry. I'm going to give you a hug. Goodbye. And we're going to.
And more than anything, it's like the color story. It's like very mm-hmm. light. You got like the lighting is just like very bright, very mm-hmm. sunny, very, you know, beautiful. And like they don't have the like tone of darkness and despair, which when you launch into the Order of the Phoenix, it starts getting to the movies where
mm-hmm.
you kind of squint the whole time because like, am I seeing things? Like,
yeah.
Is my sight going bad? Like it's one of those things where it kind of like gaslights you into thinking like, is my 20/20 vision gone?
Yeah.
Did I turn the color different on my mm-hmm. TV? Like what is going on? So you're going from like bright moment with happy words and tones in both vocal and lighting mm-hmm. and then to like darkness.
Yeah. No, I think the tone of the ending should have been darker, and I'm okay with overall most of this movie not being as dark because again, like
it's competition.
It's the Triwizard Tournament, it's fun, it's happy, and so I think it does work for like the first 2 movies to be a little like happier, and then for Prisoner of Azkaban is definitely a darker theme, mm-hmm. and then Goblet of Fire is a little lighter again, and then it's dark, 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 dark afterwards. But I feel like that transition would have been more seamless if the end of this movie, because the scene in the graveyard is dark, and the scene with Mad-Eye Moody transforming into Barty Crouch, like that's dark too. And so I think it should have just continued with that theme instead of this weird out-of-pocket bright moment at the end.
Yeah, that's really the only place where it super fell off for me.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, again, I did enjoy this movie. It's definitely above the 3rd movie.
I loved it, and I think actually this is my favorite one so far.
Okay. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to take a little bit more reflection. I think it might still be Chamber of Secrets, and then
yeah.
and then go Goblet of Fire.
Gosh, I do love Chamber of Secrets.
It's so good. I mean, the Basilisk is just so amazing.
Right? Can you guys...
Chamber of Secrets.
Can you hear... I don't know if you guys can hear this, but our cat is outside meowing, and she sounds like a mandrake. So I think the mandrakes have grown up. They're ready to party.
Yeah, we...
And she's telling us it's time to wrap up the episode.
Yeah, so thank you so much for joining with us this week. You can follow us on social media, on Instagram at The Basic Cinephile, on Twitter at The Basic Cinef 1. That's cinephile without the ILE, but the number 1, so Cinef 1.
We're on TikTok at The Basic Cinephile. We're on Facebook at The Basic Cinephile. You can find us at www.thebasiccinephile.com. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you mm-hmm. never miss an episode. Please consider giving us a rating, especially if you're really loving the podcast. That helps us find new listeners.
Yeah, and I would say be sure to follow us on Instagram because we do giveaways. And
we do.
It's cool, interesting stuff. And so if you like Harry Potter and you like free stuff.
Yes, we've been giving away a copy of each of the books, a brand new copy of each of the books. And then we've got a Film Vault book collection that gives you like it's a beautiful book with a bunch of photos from behind the scenes footage of basically how the movies were made and how they created the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Not the theme park, like the conceptual wizarding world of Harry Potter.
Yeah. So that's super cool. As our cat is saying right now, wrap it up. So thank you so much for joining with us.
Yes. And we will see you next Thursday. Bye.
Bye.